Hi, I'm Meredith.
And I'm Katie.
And you're listening to I'm Not Scared, You're Scared,
a horror movie podcast.
If you're a fan of the show, please like and follow us on iTunes and Spotify and review us. It'll help spread the word.
Also, you can follow us on Instagram at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared, or email us at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared at gmail.com.
Thanks for joining us. We're here to talk about The Visit.
On a beautiful, beautiful Saturday afternoon.
It is really gorgeous.
Really, so beautiful. Down here. Folks, mm-hmm. Pacifica is beautiful right now. The Outer Sunset San Francisco is cloudy.
Cold and foggy?
Not foggy, but cloudy. Just that's cold. Actually a dispute I have with a lot of people in that area, that they, when the sky is gray and there is cloud cover and you cannot see the sun, they say it is foggy. That is not fog. Fog is, you know, water suspended in the air down at human level. Mm-hmm. It's not cloud cover up in the sky. Mm-hmm. And I know this because I lived off of Skyline in Daly City for 10 years where
it looked like the mist from Stephen King's The Mist.
Yeah, it was actually dangerous to walk down the street sometimes because you might collide with a stranger out of nowhere. And so when we first were telling people we're moving from where we were in Westlake to the Outer Sunset, they're like, oh, I hope you like fog. I was like, we're moving away from the fog, morons. Like, we've now lived in the Outer Sunset for
like... from Daly City? You're telling me I hope I like fog? Yes, I do a lot, actually.
Yeah, it's my favorite thing. And actually, we do. We do enjoy it. but like, we've been in the Outer Sunset now for 7 years. I think I've actually seen ground fog maybe twice in 7 years. Mm-hmm. But you get in the car, you head down Skyline to come to Pacifica to see Meredith. And right when you pass John Daly, you are in pea soup, which is where our house was.
Yeah. I remember I go that way all the time to do errands when I go up the hill.
So. Yeah. Down here, sun's shining.
It's gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Wait, what year did The Visit come out?
2015.
Okay. So mm-hmm. You are doing the synopsis for that.
Indeed.
So I would like to ask you, though, before we dive into it, what's new with you?
Oh, wow.
Besides weather.
I love talking about the weather. Oh my God. It was Teacher Appreciation Week this week. I'm sure for you as well. And, you know, we got all of the super cliche, like on all the reels we see on Instagram of like the one you sent me is like, we're teachers. We all have UTIs because we can't use the bathroom. We're teachers. You know, it's all like the cliche things that your admin will do for you for Teacher Appreciation Day. Like, I know you get to wear jeans every day. We don't. And so it's like an extra day you get to wear jeans is how we're appreciated.
Woo-hoo!
I'm like... thanks. And they're like, there's bagels in the faculty room. I'm like, cool. We catered lunch on Wednesday with sandwiches and every single one of them already has condiments all over it. I'm like, all right, I'm bringing my own lunch again.
You're welcome. Here's so much mayonnaise you don't even know what to do with yourself.
Yeah. But don't get sick because you can't call out because we don't have substitutes.
What? You guys don't have substitutes?
I mean, we have a short list of people that we can try to get in advance for planned absences. But like when I was in the hospital for my lung collapse, our vice principal and our resource teachers and our aides all strapped together and piecemealed coverage for my class for the 2 days I was out. Because it's just...
and they're calling you in the ER. Do you have subplans?
I was writing subplans on my phone in the emergency room. Yes, please. Yes. Please make sure that they turn in their pre-writes for their essay. But I did feel appreciated this week.
They did
the door decorations and mine was very cute. And my class is very lovely. And I have lovely parents this year as well, from not just my sixth grade class, but the other sixth grade class and the 2 5th grade classes that I teach as well in literature. I got, you know, some cards and some monetary donations, both in the form of cash and Amazon gift cards, which, you know, are as good as cash.
Yeah. And you're like, thank you.
Yeah. I'm like, I'll take it. I did get the one necessary best teacher in the world mug, which I'm like, terrific. You know what I needed more of? Mugs.
More mugs. Here's some mugs to go with your 42 mugs. And I know people, listeners, are like, aren't you just grateful though for getting anything? Sure. But also, even a fiver wouldn't hurt.
Yeah, no. And this was
a fiver on a Starbucks card.
The one mug that I did get was accompanied by like a $25 Amazon card. So,
well, that's nice.
Yeah, I'll take it. Yeah. But I did think it was kind of funny because I have a small assortment of succulents in my classroom on top of my bookshelves, like in the window. And I was like, what if I, because a lot of the, you know, I hope nobody's listening to this, but like a lot of the mugs that I've been gifted in just the 3 years that I've been at this school, I've gotten rid of because I don't need no more mugs. And some of them aren't even really that cute. They're just, you know, whatever, like dollar store teacher appreciation mugs. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, what if I had started potting my succulents in all of my like number one teacher, best teacher ever, like teachers change the world. I would have just like this whole wall of like teacher appreciation mugs with little succulents in them.
That would be cute.
Yeah.
That's kind of, is that on par with when you gift someone wine and they're like, this will be great for me to cook with?
You're right. You're like, what a great mug. I can't wait to put dirt in it.
Oh, yeah.
But I do all of my succulents. Well, there's maybe one or two that don't, but most of them were given to me by students. And so then I name the plant after the student.
Oh.
And so whenever I got two new ones this year. I now have a Gia and a Sophie, but I already had like a James and a Lila and a Nico and a, what were some of the, I had, well, I have one that's called Admin because it was part of a thank you gift from our administrative team at one point.
Oh, that's nice.
But yeah, all of my succulents have names. But anyway, what's new with you? How was your teacher appreciation week?
It was pretty good. Yeah. I got gifted alcohol of some kind almost every
Absolutely.
Day.
Absolutely. Score.
I have amazing, generous parents that are like just so thoughtful, and they really have gotten to know me. So they really give a crap when they give, you know, when they gift me something, they're like, I really thought this out.
It's individual.
You know?
Yeah.
Like here's some Star Wars stuff, or here's some other stuff that I know you enjoy. And, my Dora decoration was Star Wars fan fiction.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
I'll show you with all like generated AI stuff and Star Wars. With me, I was trying to gather new Jedi.
That's incredible.
And my droid was named B-17 after my room number.
Oh, perfect.
So it was pretty epic. And I appreciated it a lot. So
yeah,
it was very, very sweet. And what else do I... Oh, I got sick. I've been sick, or I was.
What did you do that for?
I don't. I felt like I needed to spice things up.
You're like, things are getting a little
dull.
I was
like, there's not enough snot and sore throats in my life.
You're like, this time I'm going to get those kids sick.
Yeah. How do you like them apples? So I've been sick for like a while, and I didn't really say anything until it escalated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you just sort of like a little bit not feeling well, and you don't say anything.
You just ignore
like anybody, and you're like, this is fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, my throat is killing me.
We're teachers. We stay sick for a week before we tell anyone.
We're sick for like 10 days before I'm like, you know what? I don't feel good. So finally I had my GP call me, and I was like, this is what's going on. She's like, I'm prescribing you antibiotics. I was like, thank you. And I feel like 75% better today than I did yesterday.
That's fantastic.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
Thank goodness for modern medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm feeling better. But where I was going with that is because I'm not feeling well, I'm like, can I just go lay down and rest? So I watched the movies that we've been talking about, but I also watched all of Baby Reindeer on Netflix.
Oh, how is that?
It's insane.
Yeah.
It's so crazy. Have you heard of it at all?
Seen it. And then I've seen just the little snippet that they run when you stay too long on it on Netflix of her having that conversation with the bartender.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just... it's about a guy who he did kind of a one man show about him. He's a comedian, or he was trying to be a comedian. And then he also, you know, as you do when you're trying to be successful in acting or whatever, you have to also have another job. So he was a bartender as well. So he was showed pity to a patron one evening or afternoon or whatever. And then she kind of glued on to him a little bit, but he also appreciated the attention as well, because he has his own demons as also, and it goes into that a lot. But she stalked him and sent him insane, like tens of thousands of emails.
Oh my God.
A day.
And so this was autobiographical, this comedian, it actually happened to him?
Yeah, he stars in it in the show, and he also wrote the show and, right. and all that stuff. But it's pretty good. It was I wanted to say 7 episodes.
Okay.
But yeah, definitely worth checking out. It was very entertaining and disturbing, but also funny and dark humor, and mm-hmm. it was like a mix of yeah. stuff. So I recommend it if anyone wants to check it out. If cool. hopefully you won't feel under the weather.
Yeah, you won't need that as an excuse. You're like hopefully your life just allows you to binge watch a 7 episode limited series.
Yeah, just hang out and enjoy your life. And yeah, so it was good. Oh, people are screaming in the backyard.
Yeah, because it's so beautiful outside. Kids are just out running and yelling.
Yeah, I might have to shut the window. But anyway, so you are going to do a recap of the visits. So,
yes, ma'am.
Let me go. We're janky in our house, so I have to go shut the window.
We don't have an assistant or a producer to go shut the window for us while we stay on microphone. Yeah, we do. We're teachers. We have podcasts on the side that complain about teaching.
Teachers. Random aside, I got a gift card from parents, and I was like, oh, I'm going to order a tea kettle for my classroom, because mm-hmm. that'd be really nice to have, you know, just right, be able right. to make some tea. And a wet jet Swiffer, because I have to mop my own room.
Yeah.
I'm tired of having a disgusting classroom.
Yeah.
And I'm like, we are teachers. We order with our gift. We order spend it our own classroom. Mop
yeah.
to mop, so we can then mop.
Yeah.
Before.
It is very, very likely that some of my Amazon gift cards will go toward more novels for my shelf for my students to
Isn't
choose from.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
Well, you're just like, I just can't take it anymore.
Yeah,
this is no good.
Kids coming up to me being like, I finished my book. What do I read next? And I'm like, God damn it, Eden, stop reading so much.
Go get a dictionary.
I have those. I spent my own money on them.
Yeah. So, okay. Continue. Anyway. Moving
on. So the visit. So our last episode started our M. Night Shyamalan project with The Sixth Sense, which
amazing.
You know, in addition to being his, you know, debut to the world of film, is also, you know, one of, you know, one maybe his best film that he's made in most people's opinion. Now The Visit came out quite a while after, but at least for Meredith and I, definitely is close to the top of his list of best films. And so it's a very small cast, and it is actually it's essentially found footage style, which I don't really know if any of his other films are. I think this might be the only one.
I tried to find some fun facts about this movie. I really just couldn't. And the only thing I saw about it was the lowest budget film.
Which makes sense. Yeah.
Because of its format.
Yeah. The small cast, the one filming location, you know, there's no effects, you know, special effects or anything like that. So it makes sense that it would be lower budget. But they did have one, you know, very recognizable and very beloved actress in it, Catherine Hahn. Mm-hmm. She's not in much of the film, even though she's an extremely important character.
I love her so much.
But yeah, she's fantastic. Especially I love her in Bad Moms.
Yeah, me too. She's great in that. She's great in WandaVision.
Yes.
I love her. And Parks and Rec. She didn't have like a huge role in Parks and Rec, but very memorable. So
yeah, she's hilarious. Okay, so the film opens with a woman, Catherine Hahn's character, speaking to camera, relating the course of her failed marriage. She references her two kids, who were also ditched by this guy, and her parents with whom she had a falling out when she left home at 19 to be with this man that eventually left her. She says she hasn't spoken to her parents in 15 years, but recently they reached out and asked to meet their grandchildren. She was reluctant, but the kids insist on taking this trip, and her daughter, the older of her children, who's Becca, who is 15, wants to make a documentary about their visit meeting their grandparents for the first time, because she's a, you know, aspiring filmmaker. So after a group hug farewell, their mom puts the kids on a train to go to their grandparents, and off they go. And like, it's cute because mom is like jokingly running after the train, waving mm-hmm. and like, but then as the train picks up speed and she starts to fall behind, you see her face change to where it's like, she's actually like kind of tormented or concerned or worried mm-hmm. or nervous about sending them on this trip.
Yeah. Her face falls a little bit.
Yeah. So it's like, she starts running as a joke, but then toward the end, she's like actually running, like, you know, reluctant to let them go.
That would be like me. I'm like, oh, this is so silly. Don't leave me. I love you.
So on the train, Becca speaks directly to camera and says that the reason they pushed for the trip is so that their mom could go on a cruise with her boyfriend. We also learn that her little brother, Tyler, has been a germaphobe ever since their dad left. So that's kind of an important characteristic of him, of Tyler. And he also raps. Mm-hmm. So he's this like adorable, kind of like undersized for his age, total white boy with like long blonde hair, big blue eyes, and is like trying to spit rhymes.
Kind of a little bit of a chili bowl, but not quite. Yeah. Like his hair in the front's brushed to the side and his long is kind of like
teeth
shaggy.
Are all like spaced out and crooked and everything. And he's got, I think he's got a lisp. Like it's pretty adorable.
Wait, what's the sister's name? Remind Becca. Me? Becca. He's like, Becca.
Yeah. Come on, Becca. Let me rap on the camera. So the train arrives in snowy Masonville, Pennsylvania, and they are met by their grandparents. And the title card tells us that it's Monday morning. Becca gets introductions on camera to Nana and Pop-Pop, who seem idyllically old and clueless. They're like, mm-hmm. Oh, you've got a camera. That's grand. So the four of them drive out to the farm, and Becca documents everything. The tree swing in front of the house itself, the big grandfather clock. She's, you know, very, very filmy about all of this. Tyler delights Nana and Pop-Pop with his freestyling, and the kids settle into, quote, mom's old bedroom. And while they're in there, Pop-Pop, totally not weirdly, offers up that there's mold in the basement and they shouldn't go down there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, got it, mm-hmm. Pop-Pop. Nothing awkward about that. And then next the kids are Skyping with their mom, and they urge her not to worry, to go enjoy her vacation, because they're like, she needs this, like she needs to go have some fun and everything, like we're fine, everything's great, we're gonna have a fantastic time with Nana and Pop-Pop. So now Becca allows Tyler to record some content for the documentary. So she gives him a smaller camera, smaller handheld camera. So that's the source of all of our footage, is these two cameras that Tyler and Becca are running throughout the course of the movie. And with the camera outside, Tyler sees Pop-Pop going into a shed. And when Pop-Pop comes out, he's kind of acting strangely, like Tyler calls out to him and he just ignores him and walks away. That night when they're in the bedroom, Pop-Pop comes in and announces that bedtime is 9:30 and says goodnight. And they're like, oh, great. Bedtime's at 9:30. Awesome. Mm-hmm. But, you know, no big deal. But then when the clock reads 10:23, Becca has a craving for one of Nana's cookies and she sneaks out of the room to go get one. She pauses at the top of the stairs to narrate to the camera. And while she's talking, and you can see over her shoulder down the stairs, below at the bottom, Nana passes the base of the stairs, pausing repeatedly to vomit loudly onto the floor. Mm-hmm. And Becca's like, what the fuck? And she runs back into the bedroom, and she can still hear Nana vomiting mm-hmm. out there. But it's so funny because she's like talking to camera, and then you see over her shoulder like Nana walk into the frame down at the base of the stairs, and she just stops and like doesn't even bend over or whatever, just kind of like leans her head out a bit and just spews straight onto the floor.
She's like, I'm not hungry anymore. That's disgusting.
Yeah. So
until then though, their grandma Nana was just baking cookies, yeah. being just a stereotypical sweet grandma, being like, oh, Tyler. Oh,
yeah. And they're like, they're, you know, elderly looking, gray haired, just, you know, sweet little old country people.
Yeah.
And then she's like, and now she's spewing everywhere in the middle of the night. So next the screen says that it's Tuesday morning, and Nana is acting totally normal at breakfast. Becca finds Pop-Pop working outside to ask him about it, and he reassures Becca that Nana just had a 24-hour bug the night before, and that's where she normally vomits, is on the floor at the base of the stairs.
Just like, in, you know, with no rhyme or reason or whatever, just like a toddler.
Yeah, exactly. Would. You just throw up where you are.
Yeah.
Like a toddler or a drunk person.
Yeah.
So later Tyler shows Becca the great hide and seek space that he found under the house. You know, it's like most of these old houses, like they're built, you know, like a couple feet up off the ground with the foundation pillars underneath, and so there's a crawl space under there. And Becca and Tyler start to play hide and seek, both carrying their cameras, and so they're crawling around under like having, they have like a really cute relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you think like she's 15, I don't know if they ever say exactly how old he is, but he's only a couple years younger.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And they're clearly very close, and very compassionate to each other, and very caring. And so it's really like cute to see them scrabbling around under their, like their little, playing this hide and seek game. And as Becca pauses to strategize how to catch him, suddenly she hears a voice say, "Here I come." And a figure with long gray hair flying around races towards her. And she's like, "Oh my God." And she starts like racing away, right? And all of this is like obviously on all fours because they're down underneath the house. So they're just like crawling frantically. Then we cut to Tyler's feed where he's hiding and he's pretty proud of himself. Becca's not going to find him. And then suddenly the same figure sets upon him saying again, "Here I come, Tyler, here I come." And he runs away too. Yeah. He's like, "What the fuck?" You know, like, and like,
"Not today."
Right? "Not today, Satan." And so then we go back to Becca. She's like frozen in place. She's panting into the camera, like totally terrified. And we see over her shoulder the figure slowly creeping up behind until she hears it say, "I'm coming to get you, Becca." And then so she races away again. And then eventually both kids get, you know, get out from under the house. And they're like, you know, just kind of like frantically, desperately, like flinging themselves out into the, you know, the open air and the sunshine. And just a moment later, Nana crawls out from under the house, just cracking up. Like, this is the funniest shit that's ever happened.
She's like, "Ha ha ha, let's go make lunch." Yeah. Or whatever she says.
She gets up, she brushes off her clothes, and she cheerfully announces, "I'm making chicken pot pie."
Oh my
goes
God.
Into the house. And when she's gone, Tyler goes, "What the hell was that?"
Didn't she have her skirt?
Yeah,
like, she was tucked in the back though, and like you see her ass cheeks or something.
Oh, no.
But she walks away.
I don't remember that part, but she's definitely like,
"And they look at each other like,
I'm sorry, what?
Did you just see what I saw? Because what in the hell was going on?"
And so it's crazy because obviously, like, after the initial surprise under the house, like, you know that's who it is. You know it's Nana. Mm-hmm. And they must know it's Nana. But it's so unexpected. And her behavior seems very predatory.
It's very strange because they're like, "Oh, she's just old and she gets really sick." And you're like, "Old, feeble." Then she's, like, chasing you like a crazy.
Like a fucking spider monkey.
Like a little spider monkey. And then she's like, "See ya."
Yeah, and they're like, "Oh, oh my God, good times, chicken pot pie."
Uh-huh.
And so they're just like, obviously, just kind of dumbfounded, like, what just happened?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Okay, now there's a man at the door who introduced himself to Dr. Sam. He says he works at the hospital where Nana and Pop-Pop volunteer as counselors. He says he's just checking in because Nana and Pop-Pop missed a volunteer session that they were supposed to come to, and he couldn't get a hold of them by phone. Becca tells him that they're fine, but they're out for a walk, so, you know, they're not there for him to talk to. He leaves after mentioning that there's a lot of excitement at the hospital, and he can't wait to tell Nana and Pop-Pop about it. Like, there's something's going on that's all a buzz, and you know.
Something's crazy happened, but don't worry about it. Don't concern yourself, children.
Yeah, no.
Goodbye.
Well, and he doesn't even really seem like it's something bad when he is just kind of like, "Oh, there's a lot of excitement." So it almost seems like there's something positive.
You know, just two murderous mental patients.
Yeah.
That's fine.
We don't know. We don't know at this point. Okay,
sorry,
so now
spoilers.
Right, spoilers in this podcast where we're telling you scene for scene what happened.
Basically
in the movie. So Tyler decides to head out to investigate what's in the shed that he had seen Pop-Pop going into previously. Inside, he comments on the stink in the air before finding the source of the smell, which is a giant pile of soiled adult diapers.
Mm-hmm.
And then we cut to a conversation Tyler's having with Nana where she explains that Pop-Pop is incontinent and he hides the diapers there in embarrassment. And then later he burns them out in the field.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, again, it's like a totally reasonable explanation. You know, like, she's vomiting on the floor. Well, you know, she had a bug. Like, there's a pile of dirty diapers out there. Well, he's incontinent because he's old and he's embarrassed about it. So he doesn't just like throw them out in the house. He puts them in the shed and then he burns them. And so it's like all of like explaining away these kind of bizarre things. But it's like what as they continue to kind of pile up, you just get more and more uneasy about things.
Well, it's always explained away like, well, yeah, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, old people.
And then you're like, what the fuck?
What? Hashtag old people. Okay, so next Pop Pop takes the kids into town because, of course, Becca wants footage of everything for her film. He points out to the kids the place where he and Nana volunteer called Maple Shade. And they stop to film footage at their mom's former high school. But while Becca and Tyler are doing that, Pop-Pop starts to get paranoid about a man that he sees on the street, thinking that the man's following them. And then Pop-Pop attacks the guy, like runs across the street and like tackles him and has him down on the ground and is beating him up. The kids intercede. They're like, Pop-Pop, like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Stop. Like, he's not following us. And Pop-Pop calms down and he's apologizing. And the guy just walks away like, what the fuck is wrong with that guy? So like, OK, so again, normal old people behavior.
Yeah.
Whose grandpa doesn't do that?
Well, I mean, mine never did, but
I could see mine doing that.
Punching somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. He was kind of an ornery guy. Okay, so it's nighttime again, and the kids wake up to a strange scraping sound outside their bedroom. They're scared and hesitant to open the door, but when they do, they see Nana, completely naked, thankfully facing away from them. So all you're seeing is her little old butt. and she is violently scratching at the walls with her nails. So they dart back into the bedroom. And I love it. Tyler looks at her and goes, Jesus, Becca, I'm blind.
Oh, my God.
And so my favorite story to tell about that scene is that I don't think it was the first time that I saw this movie, but maybe the second I was actually watching it. It was on a streaming service, but it was a streaming service through like TNT or something before everything was all merged or whatever. And so what I was watching was essentially the one that had been prepared for broadcast.
Yeah.
And so they didn't want Nana's bare ass in the film. And their solution seriously looked like they took a purple paint pen and just drew giant panties over her ass. But it was like, they didn't blur it out. They didn't like CGI in underwear. It was like big purple panties over her ass. Like literally looked like it was drawn by a kindergartner directly on the screen.
Way less, I don't know, trouble to just blur it out.
Exactly. Exactly. and so that it kind of took you out of the moment.
Yeah, I bet.
but anyway, in the actual film, you do see her little butt cheeks, and Tyler's not happy about it. I mean, again, who wants to see their Nana's butt cheeks?
Nobody.
Nobody.
Except for maybe Pop-Pop.
Yeah, maybe Pop-Pop.
Maybe Pop-Pop.
Okay, now it's Wednesday morning. Becca goes back to Pop-Pop because obviously they're getting more and more concerned about Nana. And he blames the behavior on sundowning, which is another word for dementia, which is, actually a condition that a lot of people are familiar with. That, you know, it's called sundowning because it's a psychological condition that affects elderly people as it gets later in the day. Yes. I don't know if it's like linked to their circadian rhythm or the light or whatever. But, again, perfectly reasonable explanation for, yes, she does behave strangely. She has dementia. And so
I love all the perfectly rational explanations
that just start piling up.
And you're like, this is fine. And how many passes do you give these older people?
Yeah.
Before you're like, we have to get the fuck out of here.
Exactly. Well, and it's like, kids are often already kind of uncomfortable around elderly people, especially ones that they don't know well. Like my own grandparents, like my dad's parents lived in Texas, and obviously I grew up in California, and I saw them, considering they lived in Texas, I saw them quite a bit growing up. But it was like once a year, maybe for like a week or something like that. And the first time I ever, went out to visit them on my own, I was maybe like 10 or 12 or something. And it was a little uncomfortable sometimes because it's like, these are a couple of old people. I went by myself. My brothers didn't come. And so it was just the three of us. And, it was just, they're old and I was a kid. So there's like already a little bit of like kind of discomfort and awkwardness sometimes. And then you have, they're just like vomiting on the floor and walking around naked. And it's like, this isn't okay.
Yes. And you kind of wonder how often the two kids have been around older people too.
That's true.
Because if their mom had, she was estranged from her parents, their dad's out of the picture. You have to assume maybe his parents are probably not really involved in their lives. And how often are they around other old people to kind of have any kind of frame of reference for what is acceptable and what is not?
Yeah. So they're cutting them a lot of slack.
Yes.
So Pop-Pop asks Becca to agree for the kids to not leave their room after 9:30 so that they won't, you know, encounter any more of Nana's behavior related to this condition. But all the while that they're having this conversation, Pop-Pop is in the process of putting on a tuxedo. And so finally, Becca asks if he's going somewhere. He says, yeah, gotta catch the train for the costume party.
Well, you kind of were just watching and you're like, yeah, uh-huh. Interesting reasoning for Grandma, for Nana's behavior. Why is he
tying a bow tie? So she suggests that maybe he's mixing something up, and he apologizes and is suddenly confused. Like, oh, you're right. You're right. No, I'm confused. And so then Nana laughs off, who she calls the old coot.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, you're one to talk, crazy bitch.
It's that old coot getting ready for that costume party.
Going to the costume party again?
And you're like, ha, 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 everyone's crazy. Is that funny?
We're all mad here.
We're all mad.
And this is all before Nana tells Becca that she accidentally spilled biscuit batter on their laptop and tried to clean it off with you know, household cleaner. Exactly. And only on the webcam lens.
Yep.
That is the only spot. Like, first of all, how do you spill pancake batter on an upright surface of a laptop?
Good question.
Yeah. And then again, like, of course, why would an old person know that you shouldn't scrub a laptop with Comet? Like, but, you know, obviously it's like, again, all of these little slightly suspicious, mildly troubling, kind of problematic things just keep adding up.
Yeah, it's no good.
Yep. So now the webcam on Becca's laptop is no longer produces an image. Becca is still making excuses for their grandparents, but Tyler is definitely, like, suspicious. He's like, Becca, this is weird. This is too weird. Like, this is all messed. Like, this
he's
is
like,
not
this
right.
This is all adding up to be bad news.
This is wrong.
And he's like, I think he's pretty upset about the webcam. He's like, this seems on purpose.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was still trying to give them, like, a pass a little bit. Well, they didn't know. And he's like, no, this is weird.
Yeah. And she's just kind of like, you know, making that they're just old, like you just don't get it. And, you know, being the like older sibling, like not condescending, but like, you know, just calm down. This is how old people are. Like she knows, you know.
Well, she seems very maternal and like it's her job a lot of the time probably to comfort her brother.
Yeah.
Maybe if she's not buying it herself.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah. Well, and maybe part of her convincing him is trying to convince herself at the same time.
Probably. Yeah.
Because what can they do about it? Not a whole lot. So they Skype with their mom again while she's on the cruise and she can't see them because of the damaged camera. And then suddenly Tyler blurts out all the strange behavior that's been going on. The mom reinforces that it's not unusual for old people to act strangely and that they shouldn't worry. But in the strange department, Becca is helping Nana in the kitchen and asks to interview her about their mom. And she just does not answer, doesn't respond to the question. Instead, she super weirdly asks Becca to get inside the oven to clean it. And this was like the go-to image from all of the trailers for this film, because it's like the whole wicked witch in the gingerbread house tricking the kid to get into the oven type thing. So, you know, Becca does, like, she gets down and she's leaning in and everything, but obviously not completely in the oven. And Nana keeps saying things like, get farther in there, all the way in. And then, you know, but Becca, you know,
she might as well be like
rubbing her hands together,
maliciously
licking her lips. And then after Nana does agree to, quote, star in Becca's movie, she's like, all right, I'll star in your movie. So the next scene, Nana is set up for a direct-to-camera interview. She's all gussied up in hair and makeup. She looks like a regular little tart.
Yep, that's the first thing I thought of when I saw her with her hair clip on and wearing a sweater.
Well, no, and she had like a bunch of rouge on and like lipstick. Like
she
put on some kind of very garishly applied makeup as well. So Becca asks what happened on the day Mom left. And Nana immediately loses it. She's violently shaking and whimpering. She then says, no more questions about Becca's mom. And she says, I don't want to star in your movie.
I'm done with this.
Yeah. Your movie's
and
shit.
You.
And you.
I'll take my rouge face elsewhere to the costume party.
Where's Pop-Pop?
Where's Pop-Pop? We're going to the costume party.
And next we see Tyler setting up his camera to try and secretly record events that night, but Becca stops him, saying that it's unethical, you know, because she has her filmmaker's code of conduct.
He's like, I don't care.
He goes, fuck that. But later they're woken again by thumping outside the room at 10:16. When they open the door, there's nothing for a moment, and then Nana races by holding her hands weirdly behind her back. So she's just running full tilt, head down, with her hands like at the small of her back. So, you know, she takes one pass by their door, then she runs past in the other direction.
It's insane. It makes me think of like how a footballer would like hit a ball off their head.
Oh yeah. Like they're heading.
Like, yeah. And with their hands at their sides, just, mm-hmm. but hers were on her back. It just reminds me of like when my toddler would run around and be silly. Like I'm a dinosaur.
Yeah,
and
exactly. Like she's pretending to be something else.
Yeah.
And so, again, it's like it's this very physically agile, active behavior. You know, she's not a frail little old woman. Like she can crawl around like a fucking maniac. She can run like a soccer player. Like she's very fit.
It's crazy.
But so she, you know, makes one pass, then makes another pass in the other direction.
And you hear the feet going,
super loud, coming and then receding and then coming back. And then the last time she returns, this time she is crawling fast and creepily like she was under the house, straight towards their open door. So Tyler shuts it.
He's like, ah!
He's like, F that S. Now the screen tells us it's Thursday morning.
Becca, I'm setting a camera out.
Becca, goddammit, Becca.
No, he's just done with this nonsense. Yeah,
he's over it.
He's done with it.
So Thursday morning after breakfast, the four of them are walking through the snowy woods. At one point, the kids catch up with their grandparents and they see Nana staring down into a well until Pop notices that the kids approaching and he ushers her away. Later, Tyler does a direct to camera interview responding to Becca's questions about their dad who left them. And it's pretty, like, I didn't go into detail with this, but it was pretty, I mean, they do a lot of development for these kids, like their personalities, their struggles, their experiences with their dad leaving them and the emotional trauma that's left behind, which is like really relevant for when you're watching the movie, for understanding like their behavior and then also the significance of the conclusion of the movie.
Yeah.
But for the purposes of not having a 12-page synopsis, I didn't go into detail of it.
Didn't he talk about the freezing though during a football game?
Yes.
So yeah. And then
how that comes into play later on.
Yeah, yeah. And how he felt that kind of was another reason why his dad left him, because he couldn't hack it.
Yeah. He's like, I know that's not why dad left, but he's definitely like latched onto this time where he, you know, failed to perform during like a peewee football game.
Yeah. And he's just frozen. He couldn't act.
And he couldn't make the tackle.
Yeah.
Okay, so, and then after that interview, the kids investigate the well that Nana was looking into, but they find nothing unusual. Now it's Becca's turn for a direct-to-camera interview with Tyler asking questions that she's written out for him. But Tyler goes off-script and asks some very probing questions, upsetting her. So this is another, like, deep conversation about, you know, her responses to their dad leaving and her feelings and her behaviors and everything. So, and that's another thing that reinforces how close they are with each other, that they're having, like, these very honest conversations with one another. And they're also, like, they're very aware of each other's like struggles and responses. Like he sees things in Becca's behavior. Like he's very observant to how she acts and the things that she does that he believes are linked to her feelings about their dad, just like she does with him.
Yeah. And they seem to have had a strong relationship before their dad probably left. And it's definitely, you know, when something like that happens, it's as a family, you can kind of also really see how someone's impacted.
Yeah. Well, and like you'd mentioned too, like now they've spent a good portion of their childhood with a single parent. And so like you say, like Becca has, you know, had to be his caretaker. I'm sure she, you know, has to watch him all the time. And it's off probably just the two of them quite a bit. I loved these scenes because they really did develop these two very intelligent, empathetic young people as characters. Rather than just, you know, being like the kid in a horror movie,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, some kids. And you really are rooting for them to, you know, figure out what's going on, what's happening, how do you protect yourselves, and they're very endearing and sweet.
So. Yeah. So after that interview, there's a couple of strung together statements that Becca records herself, showing the pain and anger she still feels about her father. And then next, Tyler observes more weird behavior by Nana. He is sure that he's right, that something's wrong with the whole situation. And then he suggests that they should go look in the basement. And Becca's like, there's mold down there. Like, we're not going to go down there and get sick. Like, it's not weird. Like, there's mold in basements. Like, what are you talking about? And he's like, no, something's wrong. We should check the basement. Mm-hmm. So next they get a visit from Stacy, who was counseled by Nana and Pop Pop when she was in rehab. And so she's very, like, appreciative and grateful to them for the support and care that they gave her during her difficult time. She's brought Nana and Pop Pop a blueberry cobbler, mentioning that they didn't show up for their last visit at Meadowbrook. Not Maple Shade, which was the place that Pop Pop pointed out to them when he took them into town, saying Maple Shade was the hospital that they volunteered at. But now Stacy's saying Meadowbrook is the hospital that they volunteer at.
Yeah.
And then she also alludes to some drama at the facility, just like Dr. Sam had when he came by. Later, Becca wants to get footage following the grandparents around, and she hears Nana laughing from the other room. So she's all excited, like, let's go see what Nana's watching on TV. Maybe we like the same shows. And then she walks in and she finds that Nana is rocking in a rocking chair, facing straight at a wall and laughing at nothing. This is my favorite show. So Becca, you know, approaches her and then, you know, like, gently touches her on the shoulder. Nana looks up at her and says, good afternoon. I have the deep darkies. And it's like, that's great. Then Nana starts gagging and strangling herself with her scarf that she's wearing over her head.
She's like, Nana, no.
Yeah. So Becca stops her and she asks, like, Nana, what's happening? And Nana says, you have to laugh to keep the deep darkies in a cave. And again, you're like, that's great. My nana used to say the same thing.
I think it was stitched on a pillow in my grandma's house.
It was a really popular cliche in World War II. A lot of nanas say it.
The deep darkies.
The deep darkies. So Becca goes to find Pop Pop for help, and she finds him in the barn sitting with a double-barreled shotgun pointed up at his face.
He's like, I'm just cleaning it.
Yeah, and when she startles him, he immediately says, I was just cleaning it. Like, what?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Becca tells him that she thinks Nana isn't feeling well. And all of this is enough to get Becca to agree to put out the hidden camera that night. She was like, finally, okay, you're right. We got to see what's going on.
Yeah, Tyler's like, enough with this nonsense and excuses. This is crazy. Yeah. There's some crazy stuff happening.
So then there's footage showing Nana in the dark, walking around and then opening and slamming a closet door repeatedly, then disappearing, then leaping, snarling into close-up as she finds the hidden camera. She picks up the camera and records herself getting a knife from the kitchen, and then she leaves the camera on the floor. It is Friday morning now. They've been there for 4 days.
That scene really reminded me of, like, Wreck.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Because whatever that creature was in the attic. In the attic,
mm-hmm.
was sort of reminded me of of Nana.
Yeah, she looked really crazy, like, eyes super wide, like, her hair's all wild, and she's, like, snarling and showing her teeth. Like,
yeah. And it was very, very super creepy. Ugh.
So on Friday morning, the kids watch the footage and Becca says, pack your bags. This trip ends tonight. She says, we're staying away from them. But next thing we know, she's sitting Pop Pop down for his direct camera interview. And Tyler's like, what the fuck? I thought she said we're staying away from them.
She's like, I gotta get answers.
Yeah. Well, and this is another thing that, you know, I didn't go into detail with, but she has this idea that she is going to get, you know, the forgiveness for her mom from this visit. Like, she
refers to it as an elixir.
The elixir, yeah.
For her.
Yeah, because she wants to heal her mom's emotional trauma from this relationship with her parents. And so she thinks that she's going to accomplish that with this visit and this film. And so that's why she's like, she's still going to film Pop Pop because she's still hoping that that's going to happen, even though clearly things are not good.
Yeah. And you might think that, well, I thought it might be the motivation for trying to excuse so much.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Weirdness. Just, yeah. To, you know, and that way ends to... Means
the
to an
ends
end.
Justify the means.
Yeah, that's it. So anyway, that's, you know, why they didn't run off screaming into the night.
Yeah. Well, let's say they are also out in the middle of nowhere in the winter, surrounded by snowy woods. And so it's like, it's not like they could just go to a neighbor's house.
Yeah, it's pretty secluded.
Yeah. So during Pop Pop's interview, he spins a yarn about a ghost he used to see at the factory where he worked. And he shares that he's sad that their visit is almost over. The kids are in their bedroom later and they see out the window that Stacy is back and she's outside arguing with Nan and Pop Pop, but they can't hear what's being said. And then later Tyler points out that he didn't see Stacy leave. Like,
We didn't see her leave. Well, moving on.
Yep. Anyway.
I'm sure it's fine.
No big. So now Becca's going for attempt number two for her interview with Nana. Nana spins a yarn of her own about creatures from another planet collecting bodies in a pond. But after she says, but it's just a made up story. I'm like, oh, cool. You should be a writer.
It's probably what she was watching on the wall. She was cackling.
Her wall screen.
Cackling into the...
She's like, oh, those pond aliens. Becca brings up her mom again, and Nana gets upset and starts hitting herself until Becca suggests she tell it like a story. Nana finally says that she would forgive her daughter if they were to try and reconcile. So now Becca's finally gotten the webcam lens cleaned, and their mom should be home from her cruise now. So the kids stealthily go to Skype with her while the grandparents are outside so that they can arrange to make their exit from this visit early. Becca tells mom that there's something wrong with Nana and Pop Pop and their mom needs to come get them tonight. And mom's like, what the fuck? You're like way the hell out there.
It'll take me like 14 hours.
Yeah, basically. The kids then lift up the laptop and point out the window to show their mom where Nan and Pop Pop are outside. And they're rattling off the reports of all the weird stuff going on. And their mom finally cuts in and says, listen to me. Those aren't your grandparents. And then you're like, dun, dun, dun. You're like, sorry, what now?
Yeah, it's like a record scratch moment.
Yeah.
And it's... Excuse me.
And so then she asks them, you've been staying with those people the whole time? And
basically can you, strangers.
Right? Can you imagine strangers? How terrifying that would be to hear for these kids?
Yeah.
Like, those aren't your grandparents. You're yes. like, I'm sorry, what?
Oh, my God.
Because I should point out that there was like, there was a photo up in the kitchen that had these people in it. So they're like, okay, it's, you know, this is their house, you know, whatever. But mom says, so she calls the police department while she's still on Skype with the kids. But of course, she doesn't reach anyone because it's a small town and there's only like one person and they're not in right now. Leave a message.
The sheriff.
Yeah. So she's super pissed about that. And she says she'll keep trying the police from the car and she's like leaving right now. And for Becca and Tyler to get out and try to get to a neighbor. So they're, you know, obviously there are neighbors, but it's just really far. So the kids end the call when the grandparents come back inside and Pop Pop suggests that they all play a board game. That's what families do. They play board games. And then there's a close-up of a photo on the bulletin board showing Nana and Pop Pop, so the two people that have actually been there with Tyler and Becca, posing with another older couple. And so now we realize that it's the other older couple that are Becca and Tyler's actual grandparents.
Not these Looney Tunes.
Okay, so it's dark out now. They're cleaning the kitchen after dinner, and Nana gets Beckett into the oven again. But this time she slams it shut for a few moments to clean the outside.
It was definitely a moment where she shut it, and she could have been like, tea.
She literally was like, oh, just got to do this really quick.
She's all like smiles.
Yeah. And Becca's inside like yelling and like, pounding and Tyler's standing right next to Nana being like, Nana, open it. Like, what are you doing? But you know, it's just a few moments and then she lets Becca out. While the grandparents get the board game ready, the kids try to slip out of the house. But when they open the back door, they see a body swinging from a tree in the distance and it's Stacy. But you only get a little glimpse and the kids don't even really realize. They go like, what's that? And then all of a sudden, like Pop Pop like appears and slams the door. And draws the kids back in for the game of Yahtzee. But we as the viewer, like, we know it was a body hanging from a tree and we could tell, but mostly by like the clothing that it was Stacy.
Yes.
So you're like, okay, things are really bad now. Really bad. During the game, the old folks are acting weirder and weirder. Like some of the quotes I wrote down is Pop Pop goes, doesn't everyone in the cafeteria call me the Yahtzee master?
And she's like, now you're full of shit, basically. Yeah.
No, she goes,
who calls you that?
You're not a Yahtzee master. That takes 10 years. Like, it's like an actual thing.
Like, and you're like, I didn't know that was a thing.
No. Nope.
Okay.
And Tyler's like, what cafeteria? So then Becca leaves the table with the excuse of recharging her camera battery. She tells Tyler, like, just stay here and keep playing. Pop Pop rolls the dice and then audibly craps his pants.
And he's like, pardon me.
Just gets up and walks away. And so Nana suddenly starts aggressively chowing down on these like powdered sugar covered cookies. So just like shoving them in her mouth, like nom, 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 like a whole bunch at a time.
She's like, oh my, it's getting late. Like crazy.
And then she rolls the Yahtzee dice and turns and screams Yahtzee into the camera through a mouthful of chewed up cookies.
It's insane.
With just like crumbs and powdered sugar flying everywhere. And that was another image that they included in a lot of trailers, because it's very like, what the hell is happening here? It's
definitely like a batshit moment.
Yeah.
For sure.
So Becca is actually using this opportunity to finally check out the basement, thinking that her real grandparents might be down there. I'm assuming that she thinks they're being like held prisoner or something. Mm-hmm. But it is 9:30 and Nana has struck a pose in the living room. She's like,
I forgot about that.
She's frozen with like one arm straight in the air. It's almost like a Thriller pose.
Yeah.
And her head kind of tilted to the side, but she's like not moving. And Tyler's just like standing with the camera. So Pop Pop tells Tyler to wait there while he puts Nana to bed. Cause you know, this is just the sundowning. In the basement, Becca finds a stash of stuff. She finds a framed photo of the other couple from the earlier picture. She finds coveralls marked Maple Shade Psychiatric Hospital, as she finds a hammer with blood on it. And then finally, the bodies of her actual grandparents. Then right in that moment, Pop Pop appears in the basement with her, rambling about how her real grandparents told them all about the upcoming visit from their grandchildren and how that was bad because they knew Claire, who is Nana's real name, had put her own kids in a suitcase in the pond. So now we're like making connections to Claire's delusion about the pond aliens. And now Becca and Tyler would join them. They're like, yippee, I love ponds.
Aw.
So Pop-Pop attacks and struggles with Becca a bit. He chases and he's continuing with the crazy talk around the basement. And then he drags her upstairs past Tyler, who's laying on the ground, having been hit by Pop-Pop earlier. Pop-Pop locks Becca in a bedroom upstairs and he goes back down to Tyler. And in the most horrifying part of all the movie, in most people's opinion, but certainly in Grace's opinion.
Charlotte was not a fan either.
No.
She goes, oh my God.
Yeah. Pop-Pop strips off his soiled adult diaper and rubs it in Tyler's face. Yeah. Which is like, we know he's a germaphobe. You don't need to be a germaphobe for that to be the worst thing that has ever happened to you.
No kidding.
And so Tyler is just frozen, like obviously in terror, but now in horror, because we've seen him freak out about germs already like once or twice in the movie. And so we've seen that he can be like paralyzed by that fear and that phobia.
Yeah.
And so he is completely just standing frozen solid in the kitchen. And now he's got shit smeared all over his face.
Oh, my God.
Poor little kiddo. Meanwhile, in the locked room upstairs, Becca finds that she's not alone. She tries to talk to, quote, Nana, but Claire is in full psychosis, crawling under the bed, cackling like a witch. Eventually, she smashes Becca's head into a mirror, and as the attack continues, Becca finally stabs Claire with a shard that she grabbed from the broken mirror. And so she's, you know, kills Claire in the process. Downstairs, Pop-Pop is monologuing into the camera while a shit-covered Tyler is frozen in fear and disgust. Becca breaks out of the bedroom upstairs, comes down and attacks Pop-Pop, but he knocks her down. He throws her to the floor and Tyler finally snaps out of it big time and tackles the shit out of Pop-Pop. No pun intended. And repeatedly slams Pop-Pop's head inside the refrigerator door.
Yes.
And so this is like you were referring to the story he told earlier about freezing during a football game and missing his tackle. So after he tackles Pop-Pop, like
clotheslines him.
Yeah, he's having a little bit of a mental break at that point too, because he's screaming like, you gotta make that tackle, you gotta go. Like he's regressing to that moment that was his earlier trauma.
Yeah, it's definitely like, I'm disgusted. Oh my God, this is crazy. The kids are in danger, but I'm like laughing because of like all the stuff he's yelling.
Yeah.
And it's an insane moment.
So the kids escape outside just as their mom arrives with the police, you know, and hugs them and is so relieved and wipes some of the shit off of Tyler's face and, you know,
oh my God,
bustles them off into the car. So the film ends with a final interview with mom, finally telling the whole story about her fractured relationship with her parents and begging Becca not to hold on to anger like she had. They cut in a few scenes of a much younger Becca and Tyler with their dad, like obviously before he left the family. And then there's on-screen type that says, "My brother insisted I include this part." And then Tyler raps about their visit while the credits roll past him. And that is the end of the movie.
Oh, good. Good recap.
Thank you. Yeah. Meredith, did you think the visit was scary?
Yes.
Yay! Meredith never says yes.
I think, honestly, whenever something scares me, I feel deeply unsettled.
Yeah.
And it felt like a Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah.
Where something's weird, something's off, and it keeps getting explained away. And I think that's some of my favorite horror or, you know, kind of mystery or whatever is something where you're like, that could be a reason why this is happening. Oh, that's a good explanation. And then it piles on and there's more and more and more. And then you realize, no, this is very deeply messed up.
Yes.
And that always happens. And
sometimes too late.
Yes. And it made me feel like kind of revert back to when I used to watch Twilight Zone episodes or something and be like, oh, this makes me feel uncomfortable, nervous, anxious. Mm-hmm. This gives me a stomach ache. But I want more. Mm-hmm. So the scene under the house was insane.
Yeah.
And I love it. The sundowning, her like scratching on the walls was just so horrifying. And then just like the unknown.
Yeah.
And then wondering what's the twist? Because you know there's a twist with his movies. What's the twist? And I don't know. I just really like this movie. I watched it with Charlotte and she was freaked out. She's like, this movie was so scary.
Yeah.
And they don't have to do a lot to make it just kind of terrifying and suspenseful in some ways. And then also you're laughing, you know, because they had a lot of funny moments too.
Yeah, well, because some of it is so ridiculous.
Yes, it was crazy. But did you think it was scary?
Absolutely. Yeah, for, you know, most of the scenes that you mentioned, most of the behavior, the strange behavior that Nana does throughout the course of the movie, I think is the source of most of the really scary moments. And I think it's because it almost strikes a balance between, because this isn't a supernatural scary movie, her behavior when she's sundowning is reminiscent to, like, the creepy, demonic, like, Insidious-type monsters or, like, the types of, like, things that you see in The Conjuring, like, the way that they visually create those characters that, you know, with their faces obscured or their bodies contorted, like, her behavior and her physicality in those scenes is almost like it could be supernatural because it's like, she's just a normal little granny and now she's not anymore.
It definitely made me think of The Taking of Deborah Logan.
Oh, yeah.
Emily Rose. Mm-hmm. Exorcism, just like the frozen and like the face. Like,
contorted.
And,
yeah.
And the impulsivity where suddenly it's like fine. Then suddenly she's like, ah! Like that. And you're like, oh, it's just so unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, at night it gets scary. But then randomly during the day, she'd say some crazy shit or be like, I'm just having the darkies. And you're like, oh, okay, that's cool. this is fine.
It's all fine. I also think that, you know, as we did our whole summer of found footage a couple seasons ago, I think, and we, you know, talked a lot about what that does for your experience as the viewer because you feel like you're in the scene as opposed to an observer to the scene. And so it kind of, I love that, that it scared Charlotte because this really scared Grace too. It was a while ago that I showed it to her. So it was, it wasn't one of her first horror movies, obviously, but, she was maybe only like 11 or 12 when I showed her. And, the fact that not only is it found footage, but that the main characters are kids.
Yes.
And so for someone like for kids like Grace and Charlotte to watch it and to be able to identify with those protagonists and then also have the found footage format to put them even more into the scene, I think it's like a perfect storm to create something that would really scare like a preteen or, you know, an early teen.
And then they also have to kind of think, would I buy that?
Yeah.
You know, would I accept that explanation or would I get out of there?
Yeah.
Well, may not.
Like they, our... You know,
or not even me, and I'm an adult. I might be like,
exactly.
Oh, well,
it's our... our determination to, like, cling to normalcy and reality And so, and you see it again, like in supernatural films where the kid's like, I saw a ghost, and the parents are like, ha ha ha, no, you didn't. And then there's like evidence here and there's evidence here, and the kid keeps saying that. And then you find scratches on the kid, and then you find this, and all the weird stuff builds up and up and up, and the adults keep making excuses or explaining it away until eventually something happens that they can't explain away. Like it's inarguable. And then, like you said, sometimes then it's too late to go get the priest. And but with this one, it's that same thing of our determination to preserve that idea of things being okay, of things being safe or things being normal, that's something that extends even to kids. Mm-hmm. These aren't little kids, because little kids, like if they had been, you know, 4 and 6, like the first weird thing that happened, they would have started tantruming and that would have been the end of it. Like they never would have, you know, like
the end.
Yeah, they would not have been able to keep it together. But these kids were old enough where they had that adult tendency to be like, no, it's fine. He said she was just sick. Yeah, no, I know it's weird, but they're old and maybe they're just a little weird. Like we want to make excuses for people for their benefit, but then also for ourselves as like a defense mechanism to like make ourselves feel safe.
Yes. And I think on some level, children, babies, and older people are usually given a pass.
That's true. For, acting weird.
Acting weird. And they are, there's some kind of a little bit of innocence that mm-hmm. we assign to these people in lives and in your lives and in films. Even if older people are adults, they could be malicious and murderous and terrible too.
Absolutely.
But we, for some reason, we're like, oh, we're like, older people should be treated with respect and reverence, mm-hmm. and you should listen to what they say.
Yeah. That's true. No matter what, even if they're talking about, you know, aliens in a pond.
The deep darkies.
Yeah. Well, and also that extra compassion we would be expected to show family, mm-hmm. which these kids thought these old people were.
Yeah.
And then I think that that's why one of the things that made the twist at the end of this movie so effective, because it took like these old people that they had been making excuses for this whole time because of this familial relationship and their hope to reconcile with, you know, something for their mother and have healing and build this relationship and everything. And all of a sudden, like, you don't fucking know those people. Who are those people? These are complete strangers.
You don't owe them anything. Get the fuck out of there.
Yeah. So like that takes what was already a very, like if it had actually been their biological grandparents, you were already frightened, right? Because of their behavior. Yeah. And then all of a sudden you flip a switch and say, in addition to all of that insane batshit behavior, we don't know who these people are.
Yes, they are strangers.
They are complete strangers. And so that like just flipped the dial up. How scary it was. And it did it at a perfect moment in the story right before those final scenes, the scenes of Becca upstairs with Claire, well, Becca finding everything in the basement, mm-hmm. of, you know, Tyler's time in the kitchen with Pop and the diaper. Like all of that, you know, comes immediately after, not immediately, but like really shortly after that revelation that these people are total strangers.
Yeah.
And they have to keep acting like it's okay. Like it's okay. We got to get out of here with our lives.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a really fantastic end one.
It was a good one. I liked it a lot. And I honestly, with a lot of his films, I was not super... It's hard when you knock it out of the park so much with The Sixth Sense, for example. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Later in the Water, I was not a fan of that.
I never saw that
one. I really liked The Village, but a lot of people didn't. Mm-hmm. So
a lot of people didn't like Unbreakable, because that was his sophomore one, wasn't
people
it?
People really did not like it.
It was like right after Sixth Sense. I feel like Sixth Sense was 1999 and Unbreakable came out in 2000.
I thought it was really, I liked it a lot, and mm-hmm. I appreciated where it was meant to go. And it took so much mm-hmm. time for the other movies later to be made because it was
not that successful.
A little bit.
Yeah. Well, and it was just, it was so different. And we talk about, you know, Hereditary versus Midsommar so much that you have the highly anticipated sophomore project from a new person whose first film was, you know, beautifully received. And it was so dramatically different. If it wasn't what you were expecting or wasn't what you were looking for, you know, you might have had some disappointment. And then you had like something like with Jordan Peele, where, you know, Get Out was, you know, enormously like well received, and then he followed it up with Us, which I actually like better.
I loved the movie Us.
Than Get Out. And so it doesn't always happen where your second movie has to be a disappointment.
It's called sticking the landing, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, I was saying, you know, a lot of those other films I watched, I was like, oh, you know, it's good. Mm-hmm. But I don't like it as, I don't love it as much as The Sixth Sense.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to compete with that. And then I watched The Visit. And I wouldn't say they're comparable, really, but I thought it was really good. And
they're very different.
I enjoyed it immensely.
Yeah. So I would say that if I was picking one to rewatch, I would probably pick The Visit before I would pick Sixth Sense.
Yeah. Well, it's been so long that I've seen the Sixth Sense, you know, many times, but... We watched The Sixth Sense together and The Visit together. Mm-hmm. And I was like, which one did you like more? And she said The Visit because it was scarier to her. But she did appreciate the twist and The Sixth Sense because it's, you know, so legendary. Impactful and legendary. And then it's a very like, oh my gosh, I got to watch that again. Mm-hmm. Pretty much immediately. You want to go see what you didn't notice before.
Yeah.
And The Visit, not so much. You know?
No, that's true. Because like often with twist endings, like that is the first thing you want to do is go back and rewatch it and see everything in a new light because of this new information that you have. Mm-hmm. But with The Visit, it wouldn't, knowing that they're not actually their grandparents doesn't really change how anything
behavior.
Yeah, yeah. There's not really anything except for understanding the significance of Dr. Sam and Stacy's comments and the little discrepancies of Mapleshade versus Meadowbrook.
The little hints.
Yeah. But those, it doesn't really change how the meat of the movie lands because it's still just old people acting fucking crazy.
Yeah.
The revelation just like I said, like flipped, like amplified the scariness at the perfect moment for like the final scenes of the movie.
Yeah. And then when you find out what they did, you realize that they're very, very capable of murder.
Yeah. They're dangerous.
And they're very dangerous. Yeah. So, I loved it. I thought it was great. It's a fantastic movie. So,
yeah.
But I think moving on, we are going to talk about another set, the two films for next episode.
Yeah. So, we felt like Sixth Sense and The Visit were the two M. Night Shyamalan movies that we wanted to dedicate an entire episode to because we, you know, loved them enough. There are others that we enjoy and want to talk about, but maybe not, you know, a whole episode on each of them.
I mean, we've done single episodes about one movie before and we're like, I'm kind of grasping at straws about more to say.
Yeah. So we're thinking of a couple twofers to cover more of M. Night Shyamalan's work because he has a pretty extensive portfolio. Our next episode is going to be one such twofer. One movie that Meredith already mentioned, The Village.
The Village. It came out in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
And then the most recent film.
Yeah.
I think so. 2023, released in 2023, Knock at the Cabin?
Yeah.
I always want to say knock at the cabin door. That's wrong. Knock at the cabin.
Knock at the cabin, yeah.
So we'll be talking about that next time.
Mm-hmm.
So give it a watch. I know that Knock at the Cabin is streaming on Netflix right now.
Yeah. Village is not streaming on anything that I could find. I had to rent it to do my rewatch to talk about it. So.
Yeah. So check it out and thanks for listening.
See you next time.
Bye.